Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
This is Dumpty Dum, a podcast about the arches and the goings-on of Ambridge. I'm Philippa Hall, busily attempting to fix a dodgy trough.
And I'm Katie Plumpton, trying to pass biosecurity.
And then, like a herd of excitable goats, there's you lot, our lovely Dumpty Dummers. On this episode, we hear calls from our Rob, Ambridge Pony Club Jen, Vicky Cole in Vienna, Quentin in Greece, hello Q, Richard, our Biffo prop, Queen Bee Bernadette, our Brian, and Richard in an airport.
Plus, there's the roundup of the week by Suey, more in-depth history from Stephen, this time about Brookfield, the Facebook roundup by Sandra, and tweet of the week by Purple Pumpkin.
Marvellous. Now, before Katie and I start chatting too much, let's remind ourselves of what happened this week with a roundup of the week in Ambridge from R. Suey.
Hello, lovely people. It's Suey, Queen of Tart on the Twitters here. And yet another week in Ambridge. It was all about families this week. It is most weeks, to be honest. But let's get the important story out of the way first. Freddie won the Eurovision Song Contest with his Swedish fingers. Harrison says Rob, who was denied making the call to Helen last Friday, has a rock-solid alibi. Helen is not a happy camper. It's not good at Bridge Farm this week. A box of toys was dropped off at the house. Hands up everybody who thought it was from Rob. Well, it wasn't. Instead, it was from Schaefer Bass, the evil chemical company, to say thanks to the twins for appearing as the big bad's human side. Tony was incandescent. It's quite exciting to hear him that cross, although I did think he might go down with a stroke. His concern is that Bridge Farm's business reputation will go down the swanny. Helen sold Tom out. It was very gratifying to listen to. Tony went into nuclear meltdown with Tom and Natasha, and many things were said that cannot be unsaid. Helen was shocked when Pat told her that Tony had said that he wouldn't work with Tom. Well, that's simple to solve. Tony should actually retire, like he said he would, about 5 years ago. Not that I agree with Tom, I just want to point out. If Sausage Boy went off to Evesham, that would be brilliant, frankly. Underlying all of this tension is the prospect of Rob, not a tuna-baked Titchener, turning back up again. He didn't, but his brother Miles did. He was the one that made the phone call. We need a legal opinion on whether this is breaking the restraining order. Surely, once the kidnapping comes up, then Rob won't be able to get to see Gideon, Jack, whatever you want to call him. Let's cross our fingers. Then we go to Home Farm and Adam. His new half-sister arrived on Friday. Let's just go over to the Aldridge Home Farm, whatever you want to call it these days. Adam's new half-sister, Erin, arrived on Thursday. He got a pep talk from his sisters. I'm sure that helped. They seemed to be getting on very well until Adam requested anything which might prove whether she's actually his sister. She went on about sending him some dodgy newspaper cuttings rather than him going to visit her. There is something right dodgy going on there, you know. Also, super dodgy this week was Martin Gibson, sitting in on the interviews for Jazza's temporary replacement. It was just torturous to listen to. As soon as the interviews were over, Neil made a choice as to who would work out properly for the pig unit. Martin insisted that they interview the final candidate, who turned out to be George. Martin had already decided on him. Because of biosecurity concerns over Grange Farm having pigs, it was agreed that George would move in with Neil and Susan. I imagine Susan will be delighted to have two pigmen. Emma turned up and gave George what for and told him that he has to pay rent and do as he's told. This did not go down well at all. I suspect he's been employed because he's cheap. Hannah gave him what for and rejected his request for a nice office job or to work on some more of what he did on his work experience, sitting finding catchbacks on the internet, apparently. She is going to take no shit from young George. You go, Hannah. This did not go down at all well either. The moral is never to mess with the strong women of Umbridge, regardless of whether they're family or not. Till next week then, my lovelies. Hope it's a good one.
Thanks so much for that, Suey. So, Katie, welcome back. You survived your first hosting and you did so brilliantly. What have you been up to this week?
Well, first of all, I thought it was my birthday and Christmas and everything all at once when they said that there was going to be wrestling in Ambridge last week because they are two of my loves. And I was like, what? I thought that everything had all come at once, but then it didn't happen. I'm pretty gutted about that. But so reeling about that side of Eurovision, and also I don't think I've quite got over the fact that Finland didn't win Eurovision as well.
When you had this vision of wrestling in Ambridge, who would you want to see getting in the ring together?
Definitely Jazza. I think Jazza would be a really good wrestler. I'm trying to think component. I think him and Tracy could make a good tag team, but not necessarily wrestling against each other. I think we should just have a Royal Rumble and just get 30 men, 30 women, all in the ring.
Is that what a Royal Rumble is?
Yeah, they get a different person. They start with two people and then every 90 seconds a new person enters and there's 30 contestants. So it could end with Rob left at the end.
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. Now, I'd want to see Jazza playing against, I don't know, Martin, something like that, especially after this week. I think that would be quite a good thing to see. I would hope Jazza would win.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. I think George would be a very good baddie as well, because they have goodies and baddies. They have faces and heels in wrestling.
Yes, so. Of course. He could have his whole outfit. You know, he could be the new pig man.
Absolutely.
Or new businessman costume. And yes.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a niche there.
When did you first start getting into wrestling?
I'm fairly new to wrestling, just like the Archers, actually. I think they were both in 2017. So I don't know what happened in 2017.
Yes, I was going to say. Let's just sit back and take you to 2017 or not when that happens.
It's now a counselling session. So, I do love it. I go to the live independent shows. That's where I had to dash off to after I'd done my social media roundup in Birmingham. I had to jump on a train. I needed to get on a train and jump down to London and go and watch the wrestling.
You're just a busy person.
Exactly. Trying to plan an outfit that's suitable to host to be part of a dum-de-dum weekender and then go to the wrestling was quite a difficult combination.
And did you wear the same outfit or was there a quick change?
Same outfit the whole way through. So I think I got away with it.
I'm impressed. So a mouth guard and a sprig of hay in your hair or something to get the combination.
Absolutely. Works really well. And cider's accepted in both, so it's fine. How was your week?
Oh, gosh, it's just one of those weeks where everything is conspiring to not go particularly well. But I've been attacked and picked on by my family this week, Katie, and I would appreciate your sympathy with this because son is not well enough, sadly, to do exams at school. So we're having to do them at home, but in exam conditions. And let's just say I'm taking that very seriously. I will not have any noise and I will be there to moderate everything. And when I shushed my husband, because he was making a noise and talking, you can't do that in exam conditions, I don't think. Anyway.
Very true.
I've been told that I'm just someone who sucks up to the rules and isn't a rule breaker. I'm quite happy doing that.
Definitely. I'm exactly the same. Rules are there. I'm going to follow him. I'm not exactly much of a rebel. So I totally agree with you. Full sympathy.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that's enough about us. Let's get on to the important bit, which is you lot, our lovely caller inners.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And first of all, we have our Rob, who has got money on his mind.
Hello there, Philippa and Katie and Dumpty Dummers around the world. Rob Williams speaking again. I'm just wondering about the Tom and Natasha and Tony and Pat and the two demon offspring. How much money actually is involved? I mean, they're talking about college fees and deposits on houses and things. I mean, even the reasonable rates of investment, I mean, I'm no expert. I don't know how much they're going to end up with in 20 years' time or whatever. But in my limited research, I don't know how much they'll have got, because the one that I found was the child that played the baby Harry Potter in the first Harry Potter film got paid £40 for that appearance. Now, that film went on to make £750 million. So, I mean, all right, it was the first of the franchise, but the way those books had been selling, I think they knew they were onto a winner. So, you know, I just wonder how much they've actually got paid. They're being very cagey about it, just that it's, oh my word, when you look at the bit of paper with the number written on it, amounts. But frankly, very dubious, very, very dubious. That's all. See you later. Bye now.
Oh, thanks, Rob. That was great. Yes, I absolutely agree with you. How much money have they been paid? Because Natasha's been saying, oh, it's going to set them up for the future, deposit for a house or university fees. So, okay, I've done a few calculations. I'm sorry, I'm sad like that. Now, let's talk about everyone's favourite subject, compound interest.
Ooh. So,
if they got paid £5,000, say, and I know that's an obscene amount, but if they got paid £5,000, if they had got 3% a year, in 20 years' time, that would be £9,000. Well, the way student loans are and the cost of university, that's not going to make that much of a dent in it. If they managed to get 5% a year, that would still be about £13,500. So I don't know where they're getting these numbers from. And like Rob, I've been doing my research on what you can get paid if you've got the most incredible baby to model. But yeah, it seems a maximum of 300, 600 a day. So if there's both of them, 1,200, I don't know where they're getting this money from. Maybe they're so desperate for money that £10 is like the world to them. It's just quite strange. What do you think, Katie?
Yeah, I agree. It was so bizarre when they said that comment. I kind of just stopped in my tracks. I was thinking, hang on, how much money have they got for this? Because that's insane. But I am loving the research both you and Rob have done about it. £40 for the baby from Harry Potter. I'd be livid.
Yes, if you were the one, the parent that went in for the negotiations, when you got home, the other parent would be fuming about that.
Can you imagine? Yeah, I got £40 for it. Yeah.
You what? I said 40,000.
Exactly, missed them noughts off.
That's exactly. And I loved Natasha this week, how it seems the only reason she's put off going to Evesham is the cost of childcare. Seems.
Yeah, the only thing whatsoever.
Yes. What did you think about Natasha when Miles suddenly arrived on Friday?
I thought she needed to calm down a little bit. I was getting quite angry with her.
It made Helen look very calm.
I was like, get back in your box. She was like a little terrier. She got a little bit overexcited, bless her.
Well, I've got some facts for you about Miles, actually. I don't know. These are probably very obvious facts, so forgive me.
No, go for it.
But here we go. So I've got five facts. Fact one, Miles is Rob's older brother. Fact two, Rob always thought Miles was pompous. Mm-hmm. Fact three, Miles and Rob both went to boarding school together. These aren't great facts, actually, are they? But anyway, I'll keep going. Fact four, Miles's favourite meal, along with Rob's favourite meal, is toad in the hole, not tuna bake. And the fifth fact about Miles is, even though they stopped having the farm as a dairy, he took over and ran the family farm. So there you go. Those are my... You see, you think Stephen's good at his history. Sorry, Stephen, you've got nothing on me and my amazing fact.
Exactly. I think he needs to move over. There's a new fact finder in town.
Or not.
Well, I didn't know any of those facts, so I'm amazed.
Thank you.
Anytime. And I do love a toad in the hole, so Miles is my new favourite.
Yes, absolutely. That's definitely better than a tuna bake, but anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go. No, Rob, that was brilliant call. Thank you ever so much. And now we go to Jen, our Ambridge Pony Club, who has had to take sides.
Thanks, Philippa. Jen here. It's been quite a week on the Archers for me. I have been forced to come out as Team Sausage Boy. I never thought it would happen, but I really am on Tom's side here. I hope he and Natasha do take the brave move and go and do a Tony and Pat and set themselves up and see, can they do it? I mean, they're always full of this. We're ambitious, we're great, we're thrusting, we're executive. Well, on you go. You know, you go take a tenant farm, do your own thing, do it the way you want to do it, and then you won't have anyone else to blame. And you can run your business the way you want to. And frankly, I think they should. I mean, I think we've all known there's quite a bit of favoritism going on in that family. This week, Pat actually came out and said it and said, it is all about Helen. It's all about Helen's feelings. And that's it. Tom's only role in life is to do all the grunt work, do whatever needs to be done, follow Helen's directions, obey Helen. If Helen wants a trail of lights put up, he's to do it. If Helen wants signposts put up, he's to do it. She doesn't contribute to any of his enterprises in any way whatsoever. He's allowed to have them on the side, but God forbid she ever helps him out with the app or anything else. And yet, he is meant to help the cheese, the dairy, whatever needs to be done. And if he doesn't do that, he gets his head taken off. So I think they're right. I don't think that's going to change. And maybe they are better out, you know, away from that. Tony's anger, I have to wonder, Tony is just furious as Tom all the time. He's no sympathy for him. He wasn't great after Kirsty, which, okay, was Tom's fault. He wasn't great about Ren. And I just wonder if the reason he hates Tom or is so annoyed with Tom all the time is, frankly, Tom is not John.
Absolutely. That's an interesting point. Yeah, Tom is not John. Tony did seem constantly angry with him, and I haven't necessarily noticed it before, but this time it was real anger and, yeah, really getting on Tom and everything. And when Tom was trying to speak to Helen, I do have a bit of a love-hate Helen. I'm not all the time hate Helen, but majority of the time. But yeah, just each time someone has tried to speak to her recently. So when Kirsty was saying, when they were watching that film the week, and Kirsty was like, oh, the last time I saw this film was when I was watching it with Philip. And then Tom was trying to talk through all the problems now. And Helen was just like, oh, it's me. Like, let's worry about me. And I get it that that's on her head. But also, there are other people and the world is still revolving around other people as well. And not just the wonderful Helen. But it's nice to hear that Jen is Team Sausage Boy all of a sudden. So that's very exciting. So, yeah, he's got a new cheerleader in his camp.
Yes, Jen, we stand with you with your coming out as Team Sausage Boy. We support you. Yeah, I agree. I think it is. I think Jen is absolutely right that Tom isn't John, and whatever Tom tries to do, yes, he makes a lot of mistakes. He's not innocent in this. Oh, and when he suddenly announced to his father that they were looking at moving, I just thought, oh, you absolute fool, you know, of all the things to do. I know Jen called in before then, but I just thought they're both as bad as each other, Tony and Tom. And when Tony was just pushing him, you know, I hope you've learned your lesson. It was so hypocritical. Of course, Tom then went over the edge. And Tom just wants to cut and run, which is what he always does. And in a way, you get a bit of that with Tony, because normally he's so boring and monotone and sort of grey. And then he just fires up with this, well, we're not going to be able to work together anymore. I understand that Tom had done something that Tony just finds completely unacceptable, but still, it was a weird week on the whole, apart from Friday's episode, which did resolve it a little bit. I just thought it was a really strange week.
Yeah, there were a lot of toys being thrown out of a lot of prams.
Oh, I like that. Yes. Oh, is that going to be the title? Toys out of prams.
Oh, have I just come up with the title?
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to see. If there's a, yes, I'm making a note of that. Will I find that note at the end? We will all will be revealed.
The pressure.
Yeah. Are you a Tom fan then? I certainly am, but are you a...
Yeah, I think so. I'm not a Natasha fan, but I'm a Tom fan. Yeah, Natasha kind of gets my back up a little bit, as you may have noticed from the earlier comment. Yeah, but I do like Tom. He does always get the rough deal with everything, bless him. And maybe it is the answer to move away. I don't know. But then that means we may not hear from him. I don't know. Is that too far out of where Ambridge is? Who knows?
I mean, they're not going to move, are they? They're going to have all these plans and then...
Exactly.
I mean, I just... Yeah. Anyway, we've got more calls about this, so I'll stop rattling on for now. But thank you, Jen. That was absolutely super, as always. And next we go to Vicky Cole. Hooray! Vicky Cole in Vienna, who wants to give the thumbs up to some acting this week.
Hello, everybody. This is Vicky Cole. I'm in Vienna this week. First time I've managed to be up to date enough with The Archers and with Dumpty Dum to do a caller in since the Birmingham weekend. Thank you again to everybody involved in that. It was just fantastic. And really lovely to have some new friends, put faces to familiar voices, and actually now to be hearing some of the new people getting in touch with Dumpty Dum. Hello, Matt. I had a couple of quick points. I know we all love to hate Helen, and this has been quite a subject for debate lately, but I just wanted to say, wasn't she fantastic, the acting? When she was talking to Harrison this week, she was sort of spitting with fear. I thought that was fantastic. Great to hear Stephen on the recording the other week. I enjoyed that debut very much. It was interesting you were talking about Longleat and the difficulties of succession. I used to work in Warminster and we actually had the Longleat family as patients. I tested the eyes of the old Lord Bath, who was the father of the eccentric one. And I know that when that inheritance happened, it did cause an awful lot of sadness in the area. I don't imagine Lily will paint the house with erotic pictures though. And then finally, Erin. Ooh, I can't believe that even Adam won't smell a rat now. I mean, she was so quick and hasty, it just seemed unbelievable, really. Unless it's a really elaborate red herring, I don't know. Why wouldn't she come to the village to meet everybody? So it will be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know if she's going to put in a claim for money soon, and then maybe Alan will realise. Hope so. Anyway, lots of love to everybody. Take care. Bye.
Oh, Vicky, thank you so much for calling in. Having met you in Birmingham, it's even lovelier to hear your voice. And you're in Vienna with the glorious bird song in the background. The acting of Helen, yeah, I do agree with that, and particularly the final scene on Friday. I mean, I can't stand Helen normally, but that final scene where she turned into sort of Peggy from EastEnders, and when, you know, get out of my farm, get out of my pub. I thought there was a bit of that. I like to hear the strength in Helen. I just, every time I hear someone say edible forest garden, I snigger. I'm sorry, I can't help it. When they said, oh, there are snacks available at the edible forest, do people just have to eat the hedge with their mouths?
I'm so glad you laugh as well. So do I. It's such a bizarre concept.
And what did make me laugh, Harrison, in the first episode of the week, was thanking Helen, I think, for hosting them. But it sounded like roasting. It's like, oh, thank you for roasting us. Roasting you. Did they have you on a little spit going round, Harrison?
I love it. I also like the idea of Lily covering Lower Loxley with the rocky pictures. Yeah. I'm hoping that happens.
I think Harrison is the worst policeman ever. I mean, how does he know that Rob's got a rock solid alibi?
Yeah, he's not overly concerned, and also just a bit, yeah, be fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, he didn't reassure me at all.
No, needs to be a little bit more on top of it, really.
So you wouldn't have Harrison, if you needed a policeman, your vote wouldn't be for Harrison.
I think it would depend if what it was. If it was a petty crime, I'd be fine. But if it was kind of life and death, I'd be like, is there anyone else?
Yeah, yeah. If you wanted someone who could make a cup of tea, quote from the Bible, and have a nice chat, I think Harrison's
definitely
your man. But as you say, If your life's in peril, it might not be your first.
No, I think I would ask for a second opinion. get someone else from the Bill.
Yes, the Bill line of duty. Well, maybe not all of them. Some of
or
them.
Even someone from Heartbeat, I think, would be better.
Yeah. This is what this. You're too young for this, but Juliet Bravo. I remember watching that, and there was this scene I will never forget. I mean, this is so long ago, but there was some evidence on a milk bottle, and Juliet Bravo was there interviewing them, saying, "We've got the evidence on this milk bottle, and you're going to go down." So the person ate the milk bottle with all this blood, and I will never forget that.
Anyway, love it.
Sorry, slight detour.
Another spin-off podcast there.
Yeah, Helen's acting was good. I mean, she's a good actress.
Definitely.
Isn't she?
Yeah, she is believable. She's a pain in the backside, but she's believable with it.
And as Vicky said, spitting with fear when she was talking to Harrison, and yet spitting with control when she was talking to Miles.
Definitely. And I think, I know a few people have brought it up as well, but I think that's why Kerry and Sonny were so surprised when everyone doesn't like Helen, because they like her as an actress and she's very good as an actress. But we see it as the character rather than the actress.
And that's interesting because, as you say, she's a good actress. She's well known. She's played other parts. She's on the television. And she does play them differently. So this isn't her, this is the character. So she's obviously been encouraged to portray Helen like that, to wind us up.
And she does very well.
Oh, Vicky, thank you so much for that call. That was great. And now we go to Q in Greece. That's right, Mr. Quentin Rayner, who has dragged himself off a sunbed to hold Tony and Tom to account.
Hello, P&K and all Dumpty Dummers. It's Q here, calling in from the beautiful Greek coastline. Yes, I'm sure your heart bleeds. I just wanted to call in to applaud some marvellous scriptwriting and acting in the past 7 days. First of all, notably Ryan Clark, who I thought was really impressive, and I barely recognised his voice, in fact. And there was an interesting tweet from Kerry Davis, the scriptwriter for that episode. During the week, he tweeted that he wrote specifically for Ryland's delivery and meter and so forth. And I think they both pulled it off. So congratulations to them. I would also like to applaud the acting and writing surrounding the moment when Tony laid in to Tom. Because, as I tweeted during the week, I mean, Tony just gave him both barrels, didn't he? And then he reloaded. And also Tony's utter contempt reveals Natasha's venal shallowness whenever there's a glint of money. Add to that the twist that in real life David Troughton is, of course, the real life father of William Troughton, who plays Tom. Natasha just doesn't get it, does she? She thinks, oh, well, if you do a bit of sing-songy and be nicey-nicey and just carry on as normal, then everything will be sorted. She just doesn't understand the depth of Tony's disgust, really, contempt certainly, but distress also. And I was really fed up when he caved to Pat and he came over and he apologised. Oh, they're off to Evesham, are they? I mean, they will not be going, will they? And when has he ever delivered on a promise like that? But we shall see. We've got weeks of him going on, no doubt, pretending. So we're stuck with them, folks. Anyway, that's it from me. I'll be back with Philippa quite soon to co-host in a few weeks' time. So I shall say goodbye for the moment. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you for calling in. And hope you're having a lovely time in Greece. Not jealous at all. Just sat here with, well, actually, we've got sunshine today. So that's all right. We're allowed. So, yeah.
Katie, every time Quentin messages me to say, what's the weather like in England? I keep saying it's really hot and sunny, just to wind him up. So can we just keep that going? Oh, I am. Yeah. It's so hot. It's about 100 degrees here, Katie, with me. Well,
I'm boiling. I'm recording this in the garden because it's so sunny. It's unbearable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Factor 50 on, even inside.
Exactly. Yeah, it's an absolute heat wave. It's lovely. Just sitting in pub gardens all the time. No coats. Yeah, it's wonderful.
I hear the weather in Greece is awful.
Yeah, no, I don't rate it, really. Not jealous at all. Anyway, I agree with the whole Ryland thing. I didn't recognise his voice at all at first because it wasn't as high-pitched as he normally is. I felt like he'd kind of toned it down a little bit for Ambridge. But I loved him. I thought he was brilliant. I love Ryland anyway. And I thought he did a really good job and the script was fantastic for him. But this week, with the whole Tony laying into Tom and then Natasha kind of, it is just all based around money. And when they said that whole thing about the fact that it could mean that they'd be able to get a house in the future and things like that for the kids. I was wondering, if it was that much money, would I do it? It did make me kind of question my morals a little bit.
If it was a quarter of £1 million, you know.
Yeah.
Or even 50,000, yeah. You know, something, huge amounts of money, yeah.
Because also they are just babies. And unless they've got something very distinctive about them, and if those photos keep being used forever, not everyone's going to know who they are. So if they're going to get that much money, then I could probably be persuaded.
What if it was an anti-wrestling organisation, though, Katie? Would that make you rethink your life choices?
This is true. I mean, if they could wear kind of a luchador mask, then you wouldn't know it was them. So yes, if it was a lot of money and they could wear a mask, that would be fine. But yeah, if it had to be my face saying no to wrestling, I don't know. I think I need to go and have a lie down.
I think as well, as Quentin says, you know, with them being father and son in real life, that must have added another element to recording it.
Yeah, I'd never realised that. I didn't realise that they were. That's really cool. I'd like to kind of listen back to it again, I think, and just listen to how they interacted a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to have seen them recording that sort of live, and whether there was any emotion afterwards, whether they were carried on the, you know, the tenseness of that, or if they just had a laugh about
it. Yeah, can you imagine the drive home? That would be a frosty drive home.
No, it was a great call, Quentin. Thank you. And thank you for calling in from your holiday in Greece. We appreciate it so much, honestly. And I did think it was a case this week of the son's not doing so well. The son sort of overreacting. So we heard that Freddie is still intent on giving up. Tom wanted to move to Evesham. George was a pig expert overnight. And even Xander not sleeping due to the excitement of having this dog to look after for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't looked at it that way. But yeah, that was definitely the theme of the week.
Yes, if I'd had to write an essay on this week, that would have been it. And yet the women on the whole seem better. Hannah was absolutely...
Love it.
Oh, the way she put George in his place. I hope that continues next week. I really want to hear more of that. And Pat saying to Tony, you know, you're going to have to go and apologise because we all have to work together. I understand she was trying to keep the business and the family together. And Helen at the end of that week, I can't believe I'm saying something positive about Helen, but the way she just wouldn't accept Miles and get out. Bravo the women.
Yeah, I agree. This is the first time that I've liked Hannah, I think. I'm trying to rack my brain if I've liked her before, because I don't like how she is with Neil lot of the time. She has calmed down a little bit. But yeah, she can be a little bit too much with Neil. But when she turned that on George, I was like, go on.
Will he hold out? Will he stay working there? You know, if he's got to help round the house at his grandparents, if he's got to contribute financially, if he's got to do jobs he doesn't want to do, is he going to hang around?
I don't think he is. I think he thinks that he's got a cushy job and that it's all going to be grand, and then he's realised that he's not being brought in kind of top of the food chain, and that he's having to clean things out and help at home and all of that rubbish. I don't think he's going to stick about.
Well, we want you listeners to stick around, because we have got more calls coming up soon in a few minutes, including some concerns about Erin, Bridge Farm and what Freddie might inherit.
If you're thinking you'd like to call in, the best way is to go to speakpipe.com/dumptydum and send in your message that way. It's really easy, honestly.
More calls in a minute.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Now to one of our resident Ambridge specialists, our Stephen, to tell us about the history of Brookfield, part one.
This is the BBC live programme. Here is the news.
Here is the first part of a two-part, two-minute history of Brookfield, with a diversion into the history of the Barrow Estate. Our story starts in the early 1950s, when Brookfield was a 100-acre farm that formed part of the estate owned by the local squire, Clive Lawson Hope. At the heart of Brookfield was the farmhouse, occupied by its tenant, Dan Archer, and his wife, Doris, who in her youth had been lady's maid to the squire's wife, Letty Lawson Hope. The squire had no children and was getting on in years. His favourite nephew, also called Clive, arrived in 1952 to run the estate, rescuing it from financial decline. In early 1954, the younger Clive inherited a farm in Kenya from another uncle, Percy, and went off to Africa to make his fortune. That left the squire with little alternative but to sell the estate. The main purchasers were the Bellamy family and George Fairbrother, but Dan took the opportunity to buy Brookfield. Fairbrother sold his land, around 3,500 acres, to Charles Grenville a few years later. In 1965, after Grenville's death, the land was sold to Ralph Bellamy in partnership with Jack Woolley. Bellamy broke up the estate in the early 1970s, with 1,500 acres becoming Home Farm, bought by Brian Aldridge. A further 1,000 acres was sold to a Mr. Barnett, while Bellamy kept the remaining 1,000, subsequently known as the Barrow Estate. When he died, Lillian inherited it, and in 1990 she sold it to Cameron Fraser, who went bankrupt. Small farms were finding it increasingly challenging to be viable. Dan's neighbour, Fred Barrett, who was also the chair of the local NFU, suggested to Dan that they amalgamate their respective dairy operations together with that of a third neighbour, Jess Allard. The three farmers established Ambridge Dairy Farmers Limited in 1961. By the following year, Jess had died, and Dan acquired Allard's farm and installed his son as manager, renaming it Hollow Tree Farm. Then in 1965, Fred Barrett sold up Barrett's farm, formerly Sixpenny Farm, also to Dan Archer, except for a couple of acres and the farmhouse, which Fred sold to Aunt Laura Archer, who sold it a few years later to Lillian, whom she had helped set up a riding school on the land. Lillian renamed Barrett's farmhouse as The Stables. As a result of the acquisition of Hollow Tree and Barrett's farm, by the end of the 1960s, Brookfield had grown from 100 to 435 acres.
Oh, fantastic. My goodness, the history of the place. It's unbelievable. And part two of Stephen's wonderful Brookfield history will be available to listen to next week. Now, let's get back to our calls. And next we have our Queen Bee, Bernadette, who is back from the USA and has questions about George.
Hi, it's Bernadette Hawkes, Archers fan 2015. I thought I'd call in this week as I have something positive to say. I can hear you muttering for once. Anyway, I've had a brilliant time in Philadelphia with that Lady Danny Wand and a quick meet-up with Witherspoon, Amy, and Amy also from both from Manhattan, and the delightful Aunt Zagis. I listened to Tuesday's episode, the one where George and Martin Gibson blagged their way into getting a job for George at the Barrow Farm Unit. I thought the writing and the execution of the scenes was pretty well done. Poor Neil did try to stand up to Martin Gibson, so he has to be commended for that. Of course, we know that George will mess up. It's just a matter of time. But it may force Neil into full-time retirement, which would be sad. One has to question Martin Gibson's motives. What is he to gain from employing George? Anyway, keeping it short, I'll be tuning in for the omnibus because I've only dipped in and out last week or so. Bye.
Oh, thanks so much, Bernadette. And yes, a positive call. I'm usually ready to hear your slap list, Bernadette. So this is quite a change. And I'm so pleased you had a great time in America and meet up there. That's just wonderful. But yes, this thing about George and Martin. And Martin saying how the middle woman they interviewed was odd. And both Sarah and Frank were quite scruffy. I mean, those seemed strange reasons not to proceed with someone that's going to work with pigs, but never mind. There was no mention of George and the bench. I want an update on this. Has he fixed it to Oliver's satisfaction? There was mention of the money he's going to get from Oliver. I'm surprised that that's still going ahead. I'd have thought Oliver would have said no. There's Caroline's charity that George is allegedly raising money for. Is he really? Probably not. And I come back to this question about why Martin wants George to work on the farm. I understand that the cost of hiring George will be less because of his age, so they can pay him a lot less. But I just wonder, when George was working with Martin and helping him find a car for his wife, did George uncover any facts about Martin? Is he sort of holding him to ransom about something?
There's definitely something in there. I get that he is cheap, yeah, definitely. But there's definitely another plan in there somewhere. And I don't know if it's something so that George can uncover something about the farm or he can hide something at the farm for Martin. I don't know. There's got to be something else. It can't just be the cheapness.
Yes, it was so strange, wasn't it? I just didn't understand. I just felt there was more that we were not being told.
There's definitely more going on in the background. It's not just the money side of things, I don't think.
I'd like a slap list again. I'd like Bernadette to phone up every week with a slap list, I think.
Brilliant. New feature.
Yes, exactly. Who would you slap this week if you were?
Natasha, I think.
Oh,
probably got it in for her this week. I didn't realise I was this angry about Natasha.
It's okay, Katie. Let it out. Well, she could have just said to Pat and Tony, you know, actually, it was my fault. I encouraged him. I didn't really give him the opportunity to have a thought for himself.
Yeah.
But she didn't.
No, she just kind of let him keep digging the hole and, yeah, didn't really say, sorry, I did this.
Well, Bernadette, thank you so much for your call. Now we go to our Brian, who has called in to comment on the loathing of Bridge Farm.
Hello all, it's Brian. Been a while since I've rung in. Bridge Farm, how do I loathe thee? Let me count the ways. I wonder how you could improve Bridge Farm. Short of a meteorite strike, it's not, I can't think of anything that will make it better. Now Adam's merged over there. It all seems very fitting, all they're all together. I'm sure they've all been pretty horrible this week, although Natasha did redeem herself a bit by standing up for Helen at the end of the week. Well, I shall expand on how much I've loathed Tom this week, perhaps, because that's one of it's really wound me up. There's nothing he seems to do that he doesn't end up apologising for. Going way back, most of it he deserves and should apologise for, has to be said, but if on the modelling contract, he just stood up to Tony and said, yeah, we got it done. It was money. We made a choice. Live with it. Rather than just ending up apologising for it again, I'd almost prefer he did that. But now he's talking about moving to Evesham. Firstly, how's he going to afford it? B, it means he hasn't really consulted Natasha about it. He's just sort of said, this is what you want to do. And Natasha hasn't long moved her business once already. It can't be that easy to move businesses from one part of the country to another. But he's been pretty this week. Oh, I'll leave it there, otherwise I'll just go on all day. Nice to talk to you. Speak to you again. Bye.
Welcome back, Brian. Thanks for your call. And a bit of Tom loathing. Wow. Compared to everyone else, we've all been loving him this week. But I kind of get what you're saying when it's the whole moving away, because Tony was getting angry with him and Tom was a bit like, oh, well, we're going to move away. And it was just kind of a fire back to kind of show that he's got some control and everything. I can see where he's coming from with the Tom loathing.
In fact, I just didn't like any of them. If I had to take a side, it would have been Tom versus Tony. But actually, Tom did wind me up. And every time Natasha was like, Tom, don't say what you're about to say, he just strode in and said it. So, yeah, I do get that, Brian, I really do. And I love this, you know, the comment Brian made about Natasha, she's already moved a business recently once. Those poor trees are going to be dialing some sort of tree helpline because, you know, one minute they're uprooted and put in a lorry and taken to Ambridge, and then the next thing they know, they're going to be uprooted and driven to Evesham. Is it that easy to do all of that? I'm with Brian. I think it's not going to work.
No, it's hard enough to move house. You're not trying to move a business and trees. You move house and you tend to not take your trees with you. So, yeah, quite a lot to deal with.
And I'm sorry, Brian, you're going to have to sit down and take a deep breath. But I think we're going to be hearing more from the Bridge Farm lot next week. I've been having a look. Even Anna Tregoran's on next week. So there's going to be a lot of Bridge Farm chat.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Brian, keep calling in.
Yes.
Sorry, but it's going to be a lot of Bridge Farm. So we need your opinion.
And Katie, I need your opinion because when we heard Miles this week, I've been trying to find out which actor was playing the part and I can't find it anywhere. Was it the guy who played Rob? Because the voice wasn't identical, but it was similar.
Yeah, it was weird. I was in the middle of washing up and the voice came and I just stopped. I froze in my tracks. I was kind of thinking, is that Rob? Because I only started listening during the Rob and Helen bit. So I heard him a lot in those kind of confrontational bits and everything. But I didn't have a lot of background before that. So I was a bit kind of, is that his voice? I don't know. Because I think that's kind of what he sounded like, but I can't remember. So, yeah, I don't know who was playing him.
Yeah, I would really like to know. And this... I mean, Miles was so rude to Natasha as well. If you're going to try and talk people around, there are ways of doing it. And I just thought it was really uncomfortable and going on about access. Is he mad to do that? But then he mentioned this change of circumstances. So is Rob ill? Is Rob, has something else happened?
Yeah, you'd have thought he'd have gone a bit more softly with it, knowing the background of it, rather than kind of full steam ahead trying to gain access that way. It was quite bizarre.
Yes, and there is already this order, so I don't know how Miles thinks that's going to happen. I can't wait to hear Anna next week and what she's going to say. But also, yes, there's the kidnapping of his son and all of that, and that's what the courts have been dealing with, and the police wanted to interview him about again. And it'd be nice to hear the actual outcome of that, what they're going to do. But then nobody seems to have mentioned the fact that Rob diverted the flood and therefore it was much worse and killed people. And all it needs, Justin knows what he did. Now, I don't know if you went back and heard that bit when you started listening, Katie, but Justin knew what Rob had done and was reluctant to report him because, of course, Rob did it for Barrow Farm, for the business. And Justin was concerned that Barrow Farm would fall into trouble as well. It would reflect badly.
Wow. No, I didn't know that bit. I knew about it a little bit, but I didn't know about that bit. That's interesting.
But nobody's mentioning it. So every time the word Rob pops up, I'm like, Barrow Farm, everyone. Come on, guys. Come on, Harrison. Be a policeman. Work it out.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Maybe Justin will come to the rescue. That's how desperate I am.
I doubt that.
Yeah, it's true. But Brian, it was so good to hear you call in again. Please call in again soon. Thank you so much. And next we go to our biffo prop, Richard Beveridge, who has been thinking a lot about Erin.
Hello, everybody. Richard Beveridge here, biffo prop on the Twitters. I do hope you're all well. I'm calling in after Thursday's episode and the gear crunch of Erin, a concatenation of culty cliches. Not sure if I've got in ahead of Jen or not, who I no doubt will have an opinion herself. Very curious about Erin. Flat Dublin accent from the Liberties. Sound the area of Dublin, which apart from anyone else, was the birthplace of the great actress Brenda Fricker. Got me to thinking a little about the character of Paddy. I think it was probably in his late 70s when he died, born at a similar time to Jennifer, who was born, I think, in 1945. I have a feeling he probably arrived in England in the mid to late 50s, like my late father. Then it becomes curious. He works as a farmhand. Not many of those in Dublin. People who came to England were either graduates like my father from the medical schools, worked at Guinness's or worked on the docks, or indeed McAlpine's fusiliers over to work on the buildings. She says he supported the Dubs, hurling or football, but loves rugby. Growing up in Ireland in Paddy's time, before the relaxing of Rule 42, no one who played hurling or Gaelic football would be fussed with middle-class garrison games like rugby. And really? Danny Boy on a grass trumpet? A Northern Irish tune? Not Molly Malone or the Fields of Athenry? Very curious. I'm intrigued to know how this would develop. I'm intrigued to know if they've recruited that great songbird of the Liberties, Imelda May, to play Erin. Irrespective, looking forward to how this develops. Fond love to all, especially Philippa's dad. Tinkety tonk.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. Tinkety tonk, absolutely love it. And I love the word concatenation. There we go. There's a word for the day. Series of interconnecting things. There we are. No, thank you so much for that. And Erin, I just wonder what's going on. I mean, the actress is from Call the Midwife, so I was expecting her to arrive and go into midwife duty, but that didn't happen. Why did she go off Adam? Is it that she's worked out that he's not got any money, or she just didn't like him? I mean, she seemed fine with him, quite self-absorbed, but anyway, she seemed fine until she'd gone for a walk with him, with Kate and Alice. And it was at that point that she immediately called off and backed away. So was it Adam? Was it Kate and Alice? I don't know. I just felt like she's got no intention of seeing him again, has she? And I just could imagine Adam standing, waving goodbye at her until, you know, she'd completely disappeared from view.
A lot of tyres really. Screeching as she pulled away and zoomed off away from him. Wheel fins in the gravel, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that Christmas card list crossing Adam Macy off.
Absolutely. Yeah, it seemed a bit too quick of a decision. So I'm not sure if I missed it, but I don't feel like they discussed much about the fact that he didn't have much money or anything.
No. I just wondered if she borrowed his credit cards, run them through a machine and realised there was no balance. I don't know. I'm reading too much into it, is what I do.
Yeah, but because everyone kind of thought that she was getting there to kind of get some money out of it and everything. And then it just seems odd to pretend you're a half-sister of someone, meet them once and then kind of, okay, then bye. You'd have thought that the original plan to meet up with him would be to try and get something more. And so, yeah, it was a bit too quick of a decision to kind of, no, I'm not interested now. Don't come to Ireland. I'm not going to come to the farm. Goodbye.
Oh, dear. Well, I don't blame her, frankly, for that decision. But still, there's more to it.
Maybe she just met Adam.
Yeah, we're over we are overanalyzing it. She met Adam. She realized what's going on and she's out of there. So there we go.
She actually is his half-sister. Yeah. Met him and just thought, I don't need this. Yes. It is not worth it.
Oh, thanks so much, Richard. That was great. Tinkety tonk. And our last call is from Richard in an airport, who wants Freddie to think about what's involved.
Hello, Richard at Carnove Airport. Apologies for the background noise. People have complained about my background noise. I have limited options where I am. So I'm calling in partly because on request by hosts of a previous episode of Dum-de-Dum, I was asked to try to investigate whether or not angel investors were different from business angels. And although they are, up to a point, they're not different with respect to the issue I called in about, which was that for Justin or Martin Gibson or anyone else to qualify for being an angel investor or business angel of the year, they need to do investing and be angels. Neither of them are. And one can't even imagine Justin calling himself angelic in the other uses of the word. So scriptwriters, you need to get that straight. Freddie is whining, as many people have commented, about potentially losing his inheritance. Mainly wonder whether he actually, the trust envisages that ownership will be transferred to him on his 25th birthday, in which case he ought to keep quiet about it because he's setting himself up for a colossal tax bill. The whole point about a trust is to convey some of the benefits of ownership without all of them, and particularly, you know, capital gains tax, capital transfer tax, and issues such as that are dealt with by trust. So if Fred is simply going to be appointed the manager at the age of 25 of something like Lower Loxley. Isn't that more of a life sentence? I can't imagine there's a fat, juicy salary attached. So he has all the responsibilities of running something and very few of the financial benefits. No, none of the financial benefits of controlling a large asset. So inland revenue, look into it. Freddie, watch out. Freddie, watch out.
We are a well-travelled bunch, aren't we, first of all? We've kind of had Vienna, Greece, US, Richard's in an airport. Everyone's having a great time and we're stuck here. What's going on?
São Paulo airport, I believe. My goodness.
Oh, wow. Well, going back to the earlier chat, the whole angel investor with Justin, maybe the way he could become an angel investor is to chat about Rob and the River. Maybe he'll have to come out and everyone will kind of, Justin the angel.
Yes. Absolutely, I like that.
Could be a way of doing it, get him round.
It could. It was me that asked Richard about the difference, so thank you so much for helping with that. And yes, you're right about Freddie. Does he really want to have all this responsibility and no benefits? I think that's a really good point to look out for.
Yeah, that's one hell of a life sentence. Yes. Having to deal with all of that at 25, that is a lot.
The other revelation I noticed this week on The Archers was that there's the first case, I believe, of COVID ever.
Yeah, I noticed it as well. I was like, oh, someone has had it.
Yes. Ian had a meeting council. Someone had got COVID. I can imagine. They're going to need to seal down the county now, I think.
Yep, that's the end of Ambridge. It's like that plague village.
It's like Pat's idea of a good party for Jack is to have goats as the main act. Oh, I'm sure they'd want to meet goats. I don't actually think they would, Pat, no.
Yeah, I still can't believe no one's had COVID in real life. Really bizarre.
Yes.
Well, not in real life, in Ambridge.
Which is real life to us. Yes, exactly. That's great. Thanks so much, Richard. And those are the calls.
You can also send us an email if you'd prefer. Visit dumptydum.com website and click the Contact Us tab at the top of the page. Please keep them brief, up to a maximum of 250 words. Remember, you need to be 18 or over to submit any views or comments.
Thank you for your calls. We love them. Do keep calling in. And let's move on to Facebook, as we need to say an how-do to you to Mandy with a Y.
And Mandy with an I.
Louise.
And Leslie.
So what has our Facebook group been talking about this week? Let's find out as we sit back for the roundup with our Sandra.
Hello, this is Sandra with a selection from the Facebook group. I'll begin with Barrow Farm. No one seems to understand Martin Gibson's motivation in appointing George as Jazza's stand-in. Amy Keller wondered if it was to get back at Jazza for stitching him up. Rob Williams thinks that George must have something on Martin Gibson, as George clearly didn't get the job on merit. Joanne Smith suspects that Martin also gets an ego boost when George sucks up to him. Fiona Casper suspects that George is expecting a higher rate of pay, even though he's not entitled to it and has no knowledge or experience to justify more money. She also thinks that he is quietly confident of being kept on after Jazza's return, but will have a rude awakening when he screws up and is sent packing. Audrey Brown can't wait for his comeuppance. Me too. There were a couple of prop predictions. Jacqueline Berto thinks that the chaos caused by this decision will be the reason Neil and Hannah resign. Richard Woodfield put forward a scenario. 6 months later, Martin Gibson says, I'm disappointed in you, Neil. Productivity figures have nosedived these last 6 months. And Neil responds, that's right, ever since we took on George. To which Martin Gibson replies, I hope you're not trying to evade responsibility for a poor hiring decision. That sounds about right for Gibson. On to the model twins. Guy Williams asks, does anyone else think that Tom would have been better off paired with Hannah as opposed to Nasha? Darcy Jorgensen said that he couldn't keep up with Hannah. She's much brighter and sensible than he is. Pam DeLay wondered how much money is enough to sell out on your family's ethics and principles. Susan Delamere couldn't imagine it's enough to sell out your principles, but Natasha seems to lack any. And as for Tom, he needs to grow some. Dot, dot. Caroline Franklin had a prediction. What's the betting that Natasha will secretly spend the twins' photography fee's nest egg. Didn't she run up some high credit card bills when she and Tom first got together? It could be a slow burn storyline, only to come out when the girls go to university. Nicola McIntyre put up a poll. Team Tony or Team Tom, Natasha? Most voted for Tony. Pure, unadulterated greed. And now on to Ad and Erin. It looks like most listeners are suspicious of Erin. Carolyn Wright doesn't trust her an inch. Christine Naramore suggested that she will encourage a donation to her charity. Natasha had a different take. She met him, thought him a raging bore, and when Kate turned up, decided to get the hell out of there and never contact him again. Dear. Yeah, that's enough for me for this week. See you later. Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Sandra. That was great. And to everyone on the Dum-de-Dum Facebook group.
Though I can't believe that Tony ended up being over Tom, but needed to add more to that poll, I think. I need to go on there and start voting.
Oh, I should say about the Facebook group as well, if you want to join the Facebook group, you'd be very welcome. Just make sure you answer the questions, because if you don't answer the questions, we might not let you in, sorry, because we do have to be careful. So just bear that in mind.
You'll also find us on Twitter under @dumtydum. Make sure you include the Archers hashtag using a capital T and A so the visually impaired can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. Also, that hashtag's your gateway to the hugely enjoyable tweet along.
As well as at Dumpty Dum, I can be found at QuickBook Review with a 3 rather than a W.
And I can be found at KTP Land. So let's join Purple Pumpkin to find out who's won the medals this week.
Hello, Philippa, Katie and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of tweets of the week. And my thanks as ever to Jen, Bernadette and everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. This week, in amongst discovering some love for Hannah in her dealings with George, the Dumpty Dum community on Twitter has been very taken with some extremely glamorous pictures posted by Bernadette Hawkes at ArchersFan2015, who seems to have hot-footed it straight from our Birmingham meetup to a New York mini meetup with Witherspoon and Amy, followed by a Philadelphia meetup with Lady Danny Morinich at Lady Danny One. Such commitment, Bernadette, and even some pictures of biscuits to keep Philippa happy. But now to my medals for tweets of the week, with apologies that these are once again being compiled before the glorious omnibus tweet along on Sunday. You'll just have to join in for yourself if you want to capture that in all its glory. In bronze position, it's regular medalist Angela Dobb at LMS Bossy. This has been weird. I had some sympathy for Helen. I was firmly Team Hannah in her dealings with George, and I liked Protective and Attack Nasher. Then I hear it was written by a woman. In silver, it's Dame Rosie Porty at Porty Rosie, late of this parish. She said, I can't remember Rob's father's name, but holy moly did he and Ursula breed some entitled creepy scumbags. It was Bruce, Rosie, and he was revealed as a dreadful bully. But the gold medal this week goes to Steve Brooks, at Steve Brooks TA. Make sure your boxes are biosecure. That's excellent advice for any young man. Well, that's it for this week. See you all on Twitter next week.
Thanks so much, Theo. And don't forget, we're on Instagram. You're our head of Insta, aren't you, Katie?
I am indeed. So we can be found at Dumpty Dum again. So if you have any photos that you want to share at all, don't forget to use the hashtag at Dumpty Dum. And you can also tag the account as well to make sure that I definitely see it. If you've got anything, if you're having any meetups or whatever, it's lovely to see photos of everyone hanging out together wherever you are in the world and whoever you bump into. If you spot anything about any of the characters, the actual actors, that would be brilliant to see. One of our other little features is the fine archers. So if there's anything that you see that's kind of a fine art painting that you think fits perfectly into one of the storylines from the week, tag us in that as well. It's wonderful to
fantastic.
See.
Have we got an Instagrammer of the week? Are there any awards?
We haven't at the moment.
Is it me?
No,
is
I
it
think
me?
The spelling is too difficult. It is you. Well done. Yes.
Please, can I win something? I never win anything. Oh, dear. No, very good. Well, next week's episode will be hosted by Team J&J, Jacqueline and Julia, who have asked if you can get your calls in by 9 p.m. on Friday. Well, as we come to the end of this episode, we need to say thanks to all our contributors and to our social media supremos.
And we must thank Shambridge for her voices and to our podcasting parents, Lucy V. Freeman and Royfield Brown. And of course, our Jacqueline Berto.
Oh, thank you so much for listening and joining us today. It's been so much fun. And it's a bye-bye from me.
And it's a ta-ra-ra bit from me.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.